A question. You're to ride east, deep into the hills, then swing wide about Yunkai, making for Murrin. Should you come on any Astapori, drive them north or kill them. But no, that is not the purpose of your mission. Beyond the Yellow City, you're like to come up against the Dragon Queen's patrols, Second Sons or Stormcrows. Either will serve. Go over to them. Go over to them, said the bastard knight, Sir Orson Stone. You'd have us turn our cloaks. I would, said the tattered prince. Quentin Martell almost laughed aloud. Ah, the gods are mad. The Westerosi shifted uneasily. Some stared into their wine cups, as if they hoped to find some wisdom there. Hugh Hungerford frowned.
You think Queen Daenerys will take us in?
I do.
But if she does, what then? Are we spies, assassins, envoys? Are you thinking to change sides?
Kago scowled.
That is for the prince to decide, Hungerford. Your part is to do as you're told.
Always.
Hungerford raised his two-fingered hand.
Let us be frank, said Denzo Dan, the warrior bard. The Yunkai do not inspire confidence. Whatever the outcome of this war, the windblown should share in the spoils of victory. Our prince is wise to keep all roads open.
Meris will command you, said the tattered prince. She knows my mind in this, and Daenerys Targaryen may be more accepting of another woman. Quentin glanced back to pretty Maris. When her cold, dead eyes met his, he felt a shiver.
I do not like this.
Dick Straw still had doubts as well.
The girl would be a fool to trust us, even with Meris. Especially with Meris. Hell, I don't trust Meris, and I've fucked her a few times.
He grinned, but no one laughed. Least of all, pretty Meris. I think you are mistaken, Dick, the tattered prince said. You are all Westerosi, friends from home. You speak her tongue, worship her gods. As for motive, all of you have suffered wrongs at my hands. Dick, I've whipped you more than any man in the company, and you have the back to prove it. Hugh lost three fingers to my discipline. Meris was raped half round the company. Not this company, true, but we need not mention that. Will of the Woods, well, you're just filth. Sir Orson blames me for dispatching his brother to the sorrows, and Sir Lucifer is still seething about that slave girl Kago took from him.
He could have given her back when he'd had her, Lucifer long complained. He had no cause to kill her. She was ugly, said Kago. That's cause enough.
The tattered prince went on as if no one had spoken. Weber, you nurse claims to lands lost in Westeros. Lannister, I killed that boy you were so fond of. You Dornish Three, you think we lied to you. The plunder from Astapor was much less than you were promised in Volantis, and I took the lion's share of it.
The last part is true,
Sir Orson said. The best ruses always have some seed of truth, said the tattered prince. Every one of you has ample reason for wanting to abandon me, and Daenerys Targaryen knows that sellswords are a fickle lot. Her own Second Sons and Stormcrows took Yunkish gold, but did not hesitate to join her when the tide of battle began to flow her way.
When should we leave?
Asked Lewis Lannister.
At once.
Be wary of the cats and any long lancers you may encounter. No one will know your defection is a ruse but those of us in this tent. Turn your tiles too soon, and you will be maimed as deserters or disemboweled as turncloaks. The three Dornishmen were silent as they left the command tent.
20 riders, all speaking the common tongue, thought Quentin. Whispering has just gotten a deal more dangerous.
The big man slapped him hard across the back.
So, this is sweet, Frog. A dragon hunt.
Tyrion. Through the door came the soft sound of the high harp, mingled with a trilling of pipes. The singer's voice was muffled by the thick walls, yet Tyrion knew the verse. "I loved a maid as fair as summer," he remembered, "with sunlight in her hair." Sir Meryn Trant guarded the queen's door this night. His muttered, "My lord," struck Tyrion as a tad grudging, but he opened the door nonetheless. The song broke off abruptly as he strode into his sister's bedchamber. Cersei was reclining on a pile of cushions. Her feet were bare, her golden hair artfully tousled, her robe a green and gold samite that caught the light of the candles and shimmered as she looked up.
"Sweet sister," Tyrion said, "how beautiful you look tonight." He turned to the singer. "And you as well, cousin. I had no notion you had such a lovely voice."
The compliment made Sir Lancel sulky. Perhaps he thought he was being mocked. It seemed to Tyrion that the lad had grown 3 inches since being knighted. Lancel had thick sandy hair, green Lannister eyes, and a line of soft blonde fuzz on his upper lip. At 16, he was cursed with all the certainty of youth, unleavened by any trace of humour or self-doubt, and wed to the arrogance that came so naturally to those born blonde and strong and handsome. His recent elevation had only made him worse.
"Did Her Grace send for you?" the boy demanded. "Not that I recall," Tyrion admitted. "It grieves me to disturb your revels, Lancel, but as it happens I have matters of import to discuss with my sister."
Cersei regarded him suspiciously. "If you are here about those begging brothers, Tyrion, spare me your approaches. I won't have them spreading their filthy treasons in the street. They can preach to each other in the dungeons, and count themselves lucky that they have such a gentle queen," added Lancel. "I would have had their tongues out." "One even dared to say that the guards were punishing us because Jaime murdered the rightful king," Cersei declared. "It will not be borne, Tyrion. I gave you ample opportunity to deal with these vice, but you and your Sir Jaslyn did nothing, so I commanded Velar to attend to the matter."
"And so he did."
Tyrion had been annoyed when the Red Cloaks had dragged a half-dozen of the scabrous prophets down to the dungeons without consulting him, but they were not important enough to battle over.
"No doubt we will all be better off for a little quiet in the streets. That is not why I came. I have tidings I know you will be anxious to hear, sweet sister, but they are best spoken of privily."
"Very well." The harpist and the piper bowed and hurried out, while Cersei kissed her cousin chastely on the cheek. "Leave us, Lancel. My brother's harmless when he's alone. If he'd brought his pets, we'd smell them." The young knight gave his cousin a baleful glance and pulled the door shut forcefully behind him.
"I'll have you know, I make Shagga bathe once a fortnight," Tyrion said when he was gone.
"You're very pleased with yourself, aren't you? Why?"
"Why not?"
Tyrion said. Every day, every night, hammers rang along the street of steel, and the great chain grew longer. He hopped onto the great canopied bed.
"Is this the bed where Robert died? I'm surprised you kept it."
"It gives me sweet dreams," she said. "Now spit out your business and waddle away, imp." Tyrion smiled.
"Lord Stannis has sailed from Dragonstone."
Cersei bolted to her feet.
"And yet you sit there, grinning, like a harvest-day pumpkin? Has Bywater called out the city watch? We must send a bird to Harrenhal at once."
He was laughing by then. She seized him by the shoulders and shook him.
"Stop it! Are you mad or drunk? Stop it!"
It was all he could do to get out the words.
"I can't," he gasped. "It's too... God's too funny, Stannis."
"What?"
"He hasn't sailed against us," Tyrion managed. "He's laid siege to Storm's End. Renly is riding to meet him."
His sister's nails dug painfully into his arms. For a moment she stared incredulous, as if he'd begun to gibber in an unknown tongue.
"Stannis and Renly are fighting each other?"
When he nodded, Cersei began to chuckle. "Gods be good," she gasped. "I'm starting to believe that Robert was the clever one." Tyrion threw back his head and roared. They laughed together. Cersei pulled him off the bed and whirled him around and even hugged him, for a moment as giddy as a girl. By the time she let go of him, Tyrion was breathless and dizzy. He staggered to her sideboard and put out a hand to steady himself. "Do you think it will truly come to battle between them? If they should come to some accord..." "They won't," Tyrion said. "They are too different, and yet too much alike, and neither could ever stomach the other. And Stannis has always felt he was cheated of Storm's End," Cersei said thoughtfully. "The ancestral seat of House Baratheon, his by rights. If you knew how many times he came to Robert, singing that same dull song in that gloomy, aggrieved tone he has. When Robert gave the place to Renly, Stannis clenched his jaw so tight I thought his teeth would shatter. He took it as a slight." "It was meant as a slight," Cersei said. "Shall we raise a cup to brotherly love?" "Yes," she answered, breathless. "Oh, gods, yes." His back was to her as he filled two cups with sweet arbor red. It was the easiest thing in the world to sprinkle a pinch of fine powder into hers. "To Stannis," he said, as he handed her the wine. "Harmless when I'm alone, am I?" "To Renly," she replied, laughing. "May they battle long and hard, and the others take them both." "Is this the Cersei that Jaime sees?" When she smiled, you saw how beautiful she was, truly. "I loved a maid as fair as summer, with sunlight in her hair." He almost felt sorry for poisoning her. It was the next morning, as he broke his fast, that her messenger arrived. The queen was indisposed and would not be able to leave her chambers. "Not able to leave her privy, more like." Tyrion made the proper sympathetic noises and sent word to Cersei to rest easy. He would treat with Sir Cleos as they planned. The iron throne of Aegon the Conqueror was a tangle of nasty barbs and jagged metal teeth, waiting for any fool who tried to sit too comfortably, and the steps made his stunted legs cramp as he climbed up to it, all too aware of what an absurd spectacle he must be. Yet there was one thing to be said for it. It was high. Lannister guardsmen stood silent in their crimson cloaks and lion-crested half-helms. Sir Jaslyn's gold cloaks faced them across the hall. The steps to the throne were flanked by Bronn and Sir Preston of the King's Guard. Courtiers filled the gallery, while supplicants clustered near the towering oak and bronze doors. Sansa Stark looked especially lovely this morning, though her face was as pale as milk. Lord Giles stood coughing, while poor cousin Tyrek wore his bridegroom's mantle of miniver and velvet. Since his marriage to little Lady Ermisande 3 days past, the other squires had taken to calling him Wet Nurse, and asking him what sort of swaddling clothes his bride wore on their wedding night. Tyrion looked down on them all, and found he liked it. "Call forth Sir Cleos Free!" His voice rang off the stone walls and down the length of the hall. He liked that too. "A pity Shay could not be here to see this," he reflected. She had asked to come, but it was impossible. Sir Cleos made the long walk between the gold cloaks and the crimson, looking neither right nor left. As he knelt, Tyrion observed that his cousin was losing his hair. "Sir Cleos," Littlefinger said from the council table, "you have our thanks for bringing us this peace offer from Lord Stark." Grand Maester Pycelle cleared his throat. "The Queen Regent, the King's Hand, and the small council have considered the terms offered by this self-styled King in the North. Sad to say, they will not do. And you must tell these Northmen so, sir." "Here are our terms," said Tyrion.
Robb Stark must lay down his sword, swear fealty, and return to Winterfell. He must free my brother unarmed, and place his host under Jaime's command to march against the rebels Renly and Stannis Baratheon. Each of Stark's bannermen must send us a son as hostage. A daughter will suffice where there is no son. They shall be treated gently and given high places here at court, so long as their fathers commit no new treasons.
Cleos Frey looked ill. "My Lord Hand," he said, "Lord Stark will never consent to these terms."
"We never expected he would, Cleos. Tell him that we have raised another great host at Casterly Rock, that soon it will march on him from the west while my lord father advances from the east. Tell him that he stands alone, without hope of allies. Stannis and Renly Baratheon war against each other, and the Prince of Dorne has consented to wed his son Tristane to the Princess Myrcella." Murmurs of delight and consternation alike arose from the gallery and the back of the hall. "As to this of my cousins," Tyrion went on, "we offer Harryan Carstark and Sir Willis Manderly for Willem Lannister, and Lord Serwyn and Sir Donald Locke for your brother Tion. Tell Stark that two Lannisters are worth four Northmen in any season." He waited for the laughter to die. "His father's bones he shall have as a gesture of Joffrey's good faith."
"Lord Stark asked for his sisters and his father's sword as well," Sir Cleos reminded him.
Sir Ilion Payne stood mute, the hilt of Eddard's great sword rising over one shoulder. "Ice," said Tyrion. "He'll have that when he makes his peace with us, not before."
As you say. And his sisters?"
Tyrion glanced towards Sansa and felt a stab of pity as he said, "Until such time as he frees my brother Jaime, unharmed, they shall remain here as hostages. How well they are treated depends on him."
"And if the gods are good, Bywater will find Arya alive before Robb learns she's gone missing."
"I shall bring him your message, my lord."
Tyrion plucked at one of the twisted blades that sprang from the arm of the throne.
"And now, the thrust."
"Velar," he called.
"My lord."
"The men Stark sent are sufficient to protect Lord Eddard's bones, but a Lannister should have a Lannister escort," Tyrion declared. "Sir Cleos is the Queen's cousin and mine. We shall sleep more easily if you would see him safely back to River Run."
"As you command. How many men shall I take?"
"Why, all of them."
Velar stood like a man made of stone. It was Grand Maester Pycelle who rose, gasping.
"My Lord Hand, that cannot. Your father, Lord Tywin himself, he sent these good men to our city to protect Queen Cersei and her children."
"The King's Guard and the City Watch protect them well enough. The guards speed you on your way, Velar."
At the council table, Varys smiled knowingly. Littlefinger sat feigning boredom, and Pycelle gaped like a fish, pale and confused. A herald stepped forward.
"If any man has any other matters to set before the king's hand, let him speak now, or go forth and hold his silence."
"I will be heard."
A slender man, all in black, pushed his way between the red wine twins.
"Sir Alistair," Tyrion exclaimed. "Why, I had no notion that you'd come to court. You should have sent me word."
"I have, as well you know."
Thorn was as prickly as his name, a spare, sharp-featured man of 50, hard-eyed and hard-handed, his black hair streaked with grey.
"I have been shunned, ignored, and left to wait like some base-born servant."
"Truly, Bran, this was not well done. Sir Alistair and I are old friends. We walk the ward together."
"Sweet Sir Alistair," murmured Varys.
you must not think too harshly of us. So many seek our Geoffrey's grace in these troubled and tumultuous times.
More trouble than you know, eunuch.
To his face, we call him Lord Eunuch, quipped Littlefinger.
How may we be of help to you, good brother?
Grand Maester Pycelle asked in soothing tones.
The Lord Commander sent me to his grace the king, Thorn answered. The matter is too grave to be left to servants.
The king is playing with his new crossbow,
Tyrion said. Ridding himself of Geoffrey had required only an ungainly Moorish crossbow that threw three quarrels at a time, and nothing would do but that he try it at once.
You can speak to servants, or hold your silence.
As you will,
Sir Alistair said, displeasure in every word.
I am sent to tell you that we've found two rangers long missing. They were dead. Yet when we brought their corpses back to the wall, they rose again in the night. One slew Sir Jeremy Ryker, while the second tried to murder the Lord Commander.
Distantly, Tyrion heard someone snigger.
Does he mean to mock me with his folly?
He shifted uneasily and glanced down at Varys, Littlefinger, and Pycelle, wondering if one of them had a role in this. A dwarf enjoyed, at best, a tenuous hold on dignity. Once the court and kingdom started to laugh at him, he was doomed. And yet... Tyrion remembered a cold night under the stars, when he stood beside the boy Jon Snow and a great white wolf atop the wall at the end of the world, gazing out at the trackless dark beyond. He had felt... what?
Something,
to be sure. A dread that had cut like that frigid northern wind. A wolf had howled off in the night, and the sound had sent a shiver through him.
Don't be a fool, he told himself. A wolf? A wind? A dark forest? It meant nothing. And yet,
he had come to have a liking for old Geo Mormont during his time at Castle Black.
I trust that the old bear survived this attack.
He did.
And that your brothers killed these, dead men?
We did.
You're certain that they are dead this time? Tyrion asked mildly.
When Bronn choked on a snort of laughter, he knew how he must proceed.
Truly, truly dead?
They were dead the first time, Sir Alistair snapped. Pale and cold, with black hands and feet. I brought Jared's hand, torn from his corpse by that bastard's wolf.
Littlefinger stirred. And where is this charming token? Sir Alistair frowned uncomfortably.
It rotted to pieces while I waited, unheard. There's naught left to show but bones.
Titters echoed through the hall.
Lord Baelish,
Tyrion called down to Littlefinger,
buy our brave Sir Alistair 100 spades to take back to the wall with him.
Spades?
Sir Alistair narrowed his eyes suspiciously.
If you bury your dead, they won't come walking,
Tyrion told him, and the court laughed openly.
Spades will end your troubles with some strong backs to wield them.
Sir Jaslyn, see that the good brother has his pick of the city dungeons. Sir Jaslyn Bywater said,
as you will, my lord, but the cells are near empty. Joran took all the likely men.
Arrest some more, then,
Tyrion told him.
Or spread the word that there's bread and turnips on the wall, and they'll go of their own accord.
The city had too many mouths to feed, and the night's watch a perpetual need of men. At Tyrion's signal, the herald cried an end, and the hall began to empty. Sir Alistair Thorne was not so easily dismissed. He was waiting at the foot of the Iron Throne when Tyrion descended.
"Do you think I sail all the way from Eastwatch by the sea to be mucked by the likes of you?"
he fumed, blocking the way.
"This is no jape. I saw it with my own eyes. I tell you, the dead walk."
"You should try to kill them more thoroughly,"
Tyrion pushed past. Sir Alistair made to grab his sleeve, but Preston Greenfield thrust him back.
No closer, sir.
Thorne knew better than to challenge a knight of the King's Guard.
You are a fool, imp,
he shouted at Tyrion's back. The dwarf turned to face him.
Me? Truly? Then why were they laughing at you, I wonder?
He smiled wanly.
You came for men, did you not?
The cold winds are rising. The wall must be held.
And to hold it, you need men, which I've given you. As you might have noted, if your ears heard anything but insults, take them, thank me, and be gone, before I'm forced to take a crab fork to you again.
Give my warm regards to Lord Mormont, and to Jon Snow as well.
Bronn seized Sir Alistair by the elbow and marched him forcefully from the hall. Grand Maester Pycelle had already scuttled off, but Varys and Littlefinger had watched it all, start to finish.
"I grow even more admiring of you, my lord," confessed the eunuch. "You appease the Stark boy with his father's bones and strip your sister of her protectors in one swift stroke. You give that black brother the men he seeks, rid the city of some hungry mouths, yet make it all seem mockery, so none may say that the dwarf fears snarks and grumpkins. Oh, deftly done!"
Littlefinger stroked his beard.
"Do you truly mean to send away all your guards, Lannister?"
"No, I mean to send away all my sister's guards."
"The Queen will never allow that."
"Oh, I think she may. I am a brother, and when you have known me longer, you'll learn that I mean everything I say."
"Even the lies, especially the lies, Lord Petar. I sense that you are unhappy with me." "I love you as much as I ever have, my lord, though I do not relish being played for a fool. If Marcella weds Tristane Martell, she can scarcely wed Robert Aaron, can she?"
"Not without causing a great scandal," he admitted. "I regret my little ruse, Lord Petar, but when we spoke, I could not know the Dornish men would accept my offer."
Littlefinger was not appeased.
"I do not like being lied to, my lord. Leave me out of your next deception."
"Only if you'll do the same for me,"
Tyrion thought, glancing at the dagger sheathed at Littlefinger's hip.
"If I have given any offence, I'm deeply sorry. All men know how much we love you, my lord, and how much we need you."
"Try and remember that."
With that, Littlefinger left them.
"Walk with me, Varys," said Tyrion.
They left through the king's door behind the throne, the eunuch slippers whisking lightly over the stone.
"Lord Baelish has the truth of it, you know. The Queen will never permit you to send away her guard."
"She will. You'll see to that."
A smile flickered across Varys' plump lips.
"Will I? Oh, for a certainty. You tell her it is part of my scheme to free Jaime."
Varys stroked a powdered cheek. "This would doubtless involve the four men your man Bronn searched for so diligently in all the low places of King's Landing. A thief, a poisoner, a mummer, and a murderer."
"Put them in crimson cloaks and lion helms. They look no different from any other guardsman. I searched for some time for a ruse that might get them into River Run before I thought to hide them in plain sight. They'll ride in by the main gate, flying Lannister banners and escorting Lord Eddard's bones."
He smiled crookedly.
"Four men alone would be watched vigilantly. Four among 100 can lose themselves. So I must send the true guardsmen as well as the false, as you'll tell my sister."
"And for the sake of her beloved brother, she will consent, despite her misgivings."
They made their way down a deserted colonnade. Still, the loss of her red cloaks will surely make her uneasy.
I like her uneasy, said Tyrion.
Sir Cleos Frey left that very afternoon, escorted by Valar and 100 red-cloaked Lannister guardsmen. The man Robb Stark had sent joined them at the King's Gate for the long ride west. Tyrion found Timmet dicing with his burn men in the barracks.
Come to my solar at midnight.
Timmet gave him a hard one-eyed stare, a curt nod. He was not one for long speeches. That night he feasted with the Stone Crows and Moon Brothers in the small hall, though he shunned the wine for once. He wanted all his wits about him.
Shagga, what moon is this?
Shagga's frown was a fierce thing.
Black, I think.
In the west, they call that a traitor's moon. Try not to get too drunk tonight, and see that your axe is sharp.
A Stone Crow's axe is always sharp, and Shagga's axes are sharpest of all. Once I cut off a man's head, but he did not know it until he tried to brush his hair. Then it fell off.
Is that why you never brush yours?
The Stone Crows roared and stamped their feet. Shagga hooted loudest of all. By night, the castle was silent and dark. Doubtless a few gold cloaks on the walls spied them leaving the Tower of the Hand, but no one raised a voice. He was the Hand of the King, and where he went was his own affair. The thin wooden door split with a thunderous crack beneath the heel of Shagga's boot. Pieces went flying inward, and Tyrion heard a woman's gasp of fear. Shagga hacked the door apart with three great blows of his axe and kicked his way through the ruins. Timmet followed, and then Tyrion, stepping gingerly over the splinters. The fire had burned down to a few glowing embers, and shadows lay thick across the bedchamber. When Timmet ripped the heavy curtains off the bed, the naked serving girl stared up with wide white eyes.
"Please, my lords," she pleaded, "don't hurt me."
She cringed away from Shagga, flushed and fearful, trying to cover her charms with her hands and coming up a hand short.
"Go," Tyrion told her. "It's not you we want."
"Shagga wants this woman."
"Shagga wants every oar in this city of oars," complained Timmet, son of Timmet.
"Yes," Shagga said unabashed. "Shagga will give her a strong child."
"If she wants a strong child, she'll know whom to seek," Tyrion said. "Timmet, see her out, gently, if you would."
The burned man pulled the girl from the bed and half marched, half dragged her across the chamber. Shagga watched them go, mournful as a puppy. The girl stumbled over the shattered door and out into the hall, helped along by a firm shove from Timmet. Above their heads, the ravens were screeching. Tyrion dragged the soft blanket off the bed, uncovering Grand Maester Pycelle beneath.
"Tell me, does the citadel approve of your bedding the serving wenches, Maester?"
The old man was as naked as the girl, though he made a markedly less attractive sight. For once, his heavy-lidded eyes were open wide.
What is the meaning of this? I am an old man, your loyal servant."
Tyrion hoisted himself onto the bed.
"So loyal that you sent only one of my letters to Dorin Martell. The other you gave to my sister."
"No," squealed Pycelle. "No, a falsehood. I swear it. It was not me. Varys. It was Varys, the spider. I warned you, but—"
"Do all maesters lie so poorly? I told Varys that I was giving Prince Dorin my nephew Tommen to foster. I told Littlefinger that I planned to wed Marcella to Lord Robert of the Airy. I told no one that I had offered Marcella to the Dornish. That truth was only in the letter I entrusted to you. Picel clutched for a corner of the blanket.
Birds are lost, messages stolen or sold. It was Varys. There are things I might tell you of that eunuch that would chill your blood.
My lady prefers my blood hot.
Make no mistake, for every secret the eunuch whispers in your ear, he holds 7 back. And Littlefinger, oh, that one!
I know all about Lord Pataya. He's almost as untrustworthy as you. Shagger, cut off his manhood and feed it to the goats. Shagger hefted the huge double-bladed axe.
There are no goats, half-man.
Make do. Roaring, Shagger leapt forward. Picel shrieked and wet the bed, urine spraying in all directions as he tried to scramble back out of reach. The wildling caught him by the end of his billowy white beard and hacked off 3/4 of it with a single slash of the axe.
Timet, do you suppose our friend will be more forthcoming without those whiskers to hide behind?
Tyrion used a bit of the sheet to wipe the piss off his boots.
He will tell the truth soon. Darkness pooled in the empty pit of Timet's burned eye. I can smell the stink of his fear.
Shagger tossed a handful of hair down to the rushes and seized what beard was left.
Hold still, maester, urged Tyrion. When Shagger gets angry, his hands shake.
Shagger's hands never shake,
the huge man said indignantly, pressing the great crescent blade under Picel's quivering chin and sawing through another tangle of beard.
How long have you been spying for my sister?
Tyrion asked.
Picel's breathing was rapid and shallow. All I did for House Lannister.
A sheen of sweat covered the broad dome of the old man's brow, and wisps of white hair clung to his wrinkled skin.
Always for years. Your lord father, ask him. I was ever his true servant. 'Twas I who bid Ares open his gates.
That took Tyrion by surprise. He had been no more than an ugly boy at Castle Rock when the city fell.
So, the sack of King's Landing was your work as well.
For the realm. Once Rhaegar died, the war was done. Ares was mad, Viserys too young, Prince Aegon a babe at the breast, but the realm needed a king. I prayed it should be your good father, but Robert was too strong, and Lord Stark moved too swiftly.
How many have you betrayed, I wonder? Ares, Eddard, Stark, me, King Robert as well, Lord Arryn, Prince Rhaegar. Where does it begin, Picel?
He knew where it ended. The axe scratched at the apple of Picel's throat and stroked the soft, wobbly skin under his jaw, scraping away the last hairs.
You were not here,
he gasped when the blade moved upward to his cheeks.
Robert, his wounds, if you had seen them, smelled them, you would have, no doubt.
Oh, I know the boar did your work for you, but if he'd left the job half done, doubtless you would have finished it.
He was a wretched king, vain, drunken, lecherous. He would have set your sister aside, his own queen. Please, Renly was plotting to bring the High Garden maid to court, to entice his brother. It is the guard's own truth.
And what was Lord Arryn plotting?
He knew, Picel said, about...
I know what he knew about, snapped Tyrion, who was not anxious for Shagger and Timot to know as well.
He was sending his wife back to the Eyrie, and his son to be fostered on Dragonstone. He meant to act.
So you poisoned him first?
No,
Picel struggled feebly. Shagger growled and grabbed his head. The clansman's hand was so big he could have crushed the maester's skull like an eggshell had he squeezed. Tyrion tisked at him. I saw the tears of lice among your potions, and you sent away Lord Aaron's own maester and tended him yourself, so you could make certain that he died.
A falsehood.
Shave him closer, Tyrion suggested. The throat again. The axe swept back down, rasping over the skin. A thin film of spit bubbled on Pycelle's lips as his mouth trembled.
I tried to save Lord Aaron. I vow.
Careful now, Shagger. You've cut him. Shagger growled.
Dove fathered warriors, not barbers.
When he felt the blood trickling down his neck and onto his chest, the old man shuddered, and the last strength went out of him. He looked shrunken, both smaller and frailer than he had been when they burst in on him.
Yes, he whimpered, yes. Coleman was purging, so I sent him away. The Queen needed Lord Aaron dead, but she did not say so, could not. Varys was listening, always listening. But when I looked at her, I knew. It was not me who gave him the poison, though, I swear it.
The old man wept.
Varys will tell you. It was the boy, his squire, Hugh, he was called. He must surely have done it. Ask your sister, ask her.
Tyrion was disgusted. Bind him and take him away, he commanded. Throw him down in one of the black cells. They dragged him out of the splintered door.
Lannister, he moaned. All I've done has been for Lannister.
When he was gone, Tyrion made a leisurely search of the quarters and collected a few more small jars from his shelves. The ravens muttered above his head as he worked, a strangely peaceful noise. He would need to find someone to tend the birds until the Citadel sent a man to replace Pycelle.
He was the one I hoped to trust.
Varys and Littlefinger were no more loyal, he suspected, only more subtle, and thus more dangerous. Perhaps his father's way would have been best. Summon Ilion Payne, mount three heads above the gates, and have done.
And wouldn't that be a pretty sight, he thought.
Arya. Fear cuts deeper than swords, Arya would tell herself. But that did not make the fear go away. It was as much a part of her days as stale bread and the blisters on her toes after a long day of walking the hard, rutted road. She had thought she had known what it meant to be afraid, but she learned better in that storehouse beside the God's Eye. 8 days she had lingered there before the mountain gave the command to march, and every day she had seen someone die. The mountain would come into the storehouse after he had broken his fast and pick one of the prisoners for questioning. The village folk would never look at him. Maybe they thought that if they did not notice him, he would not notice them. But he saw them anyway, and picked whom he liked. There was no place to hide, no tricks to play, no way to be safe. One girl shared a soldier's bed 3 nights running. The mountain picked her on the 4th day, and the soldier said nothing. A smiley old man mended their clothing and babbled about his son off serving in the gold cloaks at King's Landing.
A king's man he is, he would say. A good king's man like me, all for Joffrey.
He said it so often the other captives began to call him All for Joffrey whenever the guards weren't listening. All for Joffrey was picked on the 5th day. A young mother with a puck-scarred face offered to freely tell them all she knew if they promised not to hurt her daughter. The mountain heard her out. The next morning, he picked her daughter to be certain she'd held nothing back. The ones chosen were questioned in full view of the other captives, so they could see the fate of rebels and traitors. A man the others called the Tickler asked the questions. His face was so ordinary and his garb so plain that Arya might have thought him one of the villagers before she had seen him at work.
Tickler makes them howl so hard they piss themselves, old stoop-shouldered Chiswick told them. He was a man she'd tried to bite, who called her a fierce little thing and smashed her head with a male fist. Sometimes he helped the Tickler, sometimes others did that. Sir Gregor Clegane himself would stand motionless, watching and listening, until the victim died. The questions were always the same. Was there gold hidden in the village? Silver? Gems? Was there more food? Where was Lord Beric Dondarrion? Which of the village folk had aided him? When he rode off, where did he go? How many men were with them? How many knights? How many bowmen? How many men at arms? How were they armed? How many were horsed? How many were wounded? What other enemy had they seen? How many? When? What banners did they fly? Where did they go? Was there gold hidden in the village? Silver? Gems? Where was Lord Beric Dondarrion? How many men were with him? By the third day, Arya could have asked the questions herself. They found a little gold, a little silver, a great sack of copper pennies, and a dented goblet set with garnets that two soldiers almost came to blows over. They learned that Lord Beric had 10 starvelings with him, or else 100 mounted knights, that he had ridden west, or north, or south, that he had crossed the lake in a boat, that he was strong as an oryx, or weak from the bloody flux. No one ever survived the Tickler's questioning. No man, no woman, no child. The strongest lasted past evenfall. Their bodies were hung beyond the fires for the walls. By the time they marched, Arya knew she was no water dancer. Sirio Forel would never have let them knock him down and take his sword away, nor stood by when they killed Lummy Greenhands. Sirio would never have sat silent in that storehouse, nor shuffled along meekly among the other captives. The direwolf was a sigil of the Starks, but Arya felt more a lamb surrounded by a herd of other sheep. She hated the villagers for their sheepishness almost as much as she hated herself. The Lannisters had taken everything. Father, friends, home, hope, courage. One had taken Needle, while another had broken her wooden stick sword over his knee. They had even taken her stupid secret. The storehouse had been big enough for her to creep off and make her water in some corner when there was no one looking, but it was different on the road. She held it as long as she could, but finally she had to squat by a bush and skin down her breeches in front of all of them. It was that, or wet herself. Hot Pie gaped at her with big moon eyes, but no one else even troubled to look. Girl sheep or boy sheep, Sir Gregor and his men did not seem to care. Their captors permitted no chatter. A broken lip taught Arya to hold her tongue. Others never learned at all. One boy of three would not stop calling for his father, so they smashed his face in with a spiked mace. Then the boy's mother started screaming, and Raff the Sweetling killed her as well. Arya watched them die and did nothing. What good did it do you to be brave? One of the women, picked for questioning, had tried to be brave, but she had died screaming like all the rest. There were no brave people on that march, only scared and hungry ones. Most were women and children. The few men were very old or very young. The rest had been chained to that gibbet and left for the wolves and the crows. Gendry was only spared because he admitted to forging the horned helm himself. Smiths, even apprentice smiths, were too valuable to kill. They were being taken to serve Lord Tywin Lannister at Harrenhal, the mountain told them.
You're traitors and rebels, so thank your gods that Lord Tywin's given you this chance. It's more than you'd get from the outlaws. Obey, serve, and live.
It's not just, it's not,
she heard one wizened old woman complain to another, when they had bedded down for the night.
We never did no treason. The others come in and took what they wanted, same as this bunch. Lord Beric did us no hurt, though, her friend whispered, and that red priest with him, he paid for all they took. Paid? He took two of my chickens and gave me a piece of paper with a mark on it. Can I eat a bit of raggy old paper, I ask you? Will it give me eggs?
She looked about to see that no guards were near and spat three times.
There's for the Tullys, and there's for the Lannisters, and there's for the Starks.
It's a sin and a shame, an old man hissed. When the old king was still alive, he'd not have stood for this.
King Robert? Arya asked, forgetting herself.
King Ares, guards grace him, the old man said, too loudly.
A guard came sauntering over to shut them up. The old man lost both his teeth, and there was no more talk that night. Besides his captives, Sir Gregor was bringing back a dozen pigs, a cage of chickens, a scrawny milk cow, and nine wagons of salt fish. The mountain and his men had horses, but their captives were all afoot, and those too weak to keep up were killed out of hand, along with anyone foolish enough to flee. The guards took women off into the bushes at night, and most seemed to expect it, and went along meekly enough. One girl, prettier than the others, was made to go with four or five different men every night, until finally she hit one with a rock. Sir Gregor made everyone watch while he took off her head with a sweep of his massive two-handed greatsword. "Leave the body for the wolves," he commanded when the deed was done, handing the sword to his squire to be cleaned. Arya glanced sidelong at Needle, sheathed at the hip of a black-bearded, balding man-at-arms called Polliver. It's good that they took it away, she thought. Otherwise she would have tried to stab Sir Gregor, and he would have cut her right in half, and the wolves would eat her too. Polliver was not so bad as some of the others, even though he'd stolen Needle. The night she was caught, the Lannister men had been nameless strangers, with faces as alike as their nasal helms. But she had come to know them all. You had to know who was lazy and who was cruel, who was smart and who was stupid. You had to learn that even though the one they call Shitmouth had the foulest tongue she'd ever heard, he'd give you an extra piece of bread if you asked, while jolly old Chiswick and soft-spoken Ref would just give you the back of their hand. Arya watched and listened and polished her hates the way Gendry had once polished his horned helm. Dunson wore those bull's horns now, and she hated him for it. She hated Polliver for Needle, and she hated old Chiswick, who thought he was funny. And Raff the Sweetling, who'd driven his spear through Lummy's throat, she hated even more. She hated Sir Aemery Lorch for Yoren, and she hated Sir Meron Trant for Sirio. The Hound for killing the butcher's boy, Micah. And Sir Ilion, and Prince Joffrey, and the Queen, for the sake of her father, and Fat Tom, and Desmond and the rest, and even for Lady, Sansa's wolf. The Tickler was almost too scary to hate. At times she could almost forget he was still with them. When he was not asking questions, he was just another soldier, quieter than most, with a face like a thousand other men. Every night Arya would say their names. Sir Gregor, she'd whisper to a stone pillow. Dunson, Polliver, Chiswick, Ref the Sweetling, the Tickler and the Hound, Sir Aemery, Sir Ilion, Sir Merin, King Joffrey, Queen Cersei. Back in Winterfell, Arya had prayed with her mother in the Sept and with her father in the Guardswood, but there were no guards on the road to Harrenhal, and her names were the only prayer she cared to remember. Every day they marched, and every night she said her names, until finally the trees thinned and gave way to a patchwork landscape of rolling hills, meandering streams, and sunlit fields, where the husks of burnt holdfasts thrust up black as rotten teeth. It was another long day's march before they glimpsed the towers of Harrenhal in the distance, hard beside the blue waters of the lake. It would be better once they got to Harrenhal, the captives told each other, but Arya was not so certain. She remembered old Nan's stories
of the castle built on fear. Harren the Black had mixed human blood in the mortar, Nan used to say, dropping her voice so the children would need to lean close to hear. But Aegon's dragons had roasted Harren and all his sons within their great walls of stone. Arya chewed her lip as she walked along on her feet, grown hard with callous. It would not be much longer, she told herself. Those towers could not be more than a few miles off. Yet they walked all that day and most of the next, before at last they reached the fringes of Lord Tywin's army, encamped west of the castle amidst the scorched remains of a town. Harrenhal was deceptive from afar, because it was so huge. Its colossal curtain walls rose beside the lake, sheer and sudden as mountain cliffs, while atop their battlements the rows of wood and iron scorpions looked as small as the bugs for which they were named. The stink of the Lannister host reached Arya well before she could make out the devices on the banners that sprouted along the lake shore atop the pavilions of the Westermen. From the smell, Arya could tell that Lord Tywin had been here for some time. The latrines that ringed the encampment were overflowing and swarming with flies, and she saw faint greenish fuzz on many of the sharpened stakes that protected the perimeters. Harrenhal's gatehouse, itself as large as Winterfell's great keep, was as scarred as it was massive, its stones fissured and discolored. From outside, only the tops of five immense towers could be seen beyond the walls. The shortest of them was half again as tall as the highest tower in Winterfell. But they did not soar the way a proper tower did. Arya thought they looked like some old man's gnarled, knuckly fingers groping after a passing cloud. She remembered Nan telling how the stone had melted and flowed like candle wax down the steps and into the windows, glowing a sullen, searing red as it sought out Harren where he hid. Arya could believe every word. Each tower was more grotesque and misshapen than the last, lumpy and runnelled and cracked. "I don't want to go there," Hot Pie squeaked as Harrenhal opened its gates to them. "There's ghosts in there!" Chiswick heard him, but for once he only smiled. "Baker, boy, is your choice. Come join the ghosts or be one." Hot Pie went in with the rest of them. In the echoing stone and timber bathhouse, the captives were stripped and made to scrub and scrape themselves raw in tubs of scalding hot water. Two fierce old women supervised the process, discussing them as bluntly as if they were newly acquired donkeys. When Arya's turn came round, goodwife Amabel clucked in dismay at the sight of her feet, while goodwife Hera felt the callus on her fingers that long hours of practice with needle had earned her.
"Got those churning butter, I'll wager," she said. "Some farmer's whelp, are you? Well, never you mind, girl. You'll have a chance to win a higher place in this world if you work hard. If you won't work hard, you'll be beaten. And what do they call you?"
Arya dare not say her true name. But Arry was no good either. It was a boy's name, and they could see she was no boy. "Weasel," she said, naming the first girl she could think of. "Lommy call me Weasel."
"I can see why," sniffed goodwife Amabel. "That air is a fright, and a nest for lice as well. We'll have it off, and then you're for the kitchens."
"I'd soon attend the horses." Arya liked horses, and maybe if she was in the stable, she'd be able to steal one and escape. Goodwife Hera slapped her so hard that her swollen lip broke open all over again.
"And keep that tongue to yourself, or you'll get worse. No one asked your views."
The blood in her mouth had a salty metal tang to it. Arya dropped her gaze and said nothing. "If I still had needle, she wouldn't dare hit me," she thought sullenly.
"Lord Tywin and his knights have grooms and squires to tend their horses. They don't need the likes of you,"
goodwife Amabel said.
The kitchens are snug and clean, and there's always a warm fire to sleep by and plenty to eat. You might have done well there, but I can see you're not a clever girl. However, I believe we should give this one to Wheeze."
"If you think so, Amabel,"